Several drone strikes rained down on Moscow early this morning, marking the first attack on civilian buildings in the Russian capital since the war in Ukraine began. In the Ukrainian capital, at least one person is dead after airstrikes pummeled the city overnight. It's the latest in a wave of aerial attacks on Kyiv in recent weeks. And in Bakhmut, where Russian and Ukrainian forces have been engaging in relentless bloody battle for months, there are reports that the Wagner Group mercenaries are withdrawing from the fight. Wagner leader Yevgeny Prigozhin declared the city under Russian control and announced his forces would be leaving. Now, regular Russian troops, including soldiers recruited from prisons, are moving into the embattled city. The Wagner Group has played a growing role in the war in Ukraine, but the private army has a history of fighting in Syria, Libya, Mali, and the Central African Republic, among other countries. We wanted to learn more about the Wagner Group, so let's bring in retired General Peter Zwack, a global fellow at the Wilson Center's Kennan Institute. He formerly served as the U.S. senior defense official to the Russian Federation from 2012 to 2014. General, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me on, Deepa.
What do you make of these reports that Wagner is pulling out of Bakhmut and regular Russian forces are moving in?
Prigozhin, finally, Wagner got the modicum of a Pyrrhic victory a week ago when they cleared almost all the rubble, and that's all that's left of Bakhmut, and now are talking about pulling out. What makes me wonder is as if having secured, if you will, that prestige point that I think Prigozhin needs even more in Russia, that now he turns it over to the military with the Ukrainians on the eve of a counteroffensive of some part that could likely also engulf Bakhmut. And it would be better not to have Bakhmut retaken on the Wagner watch, but on the very, very shaky Russian military watch.
So let's talk about the Wagner Group. It's a private military contractor fighting with Russia. Tell us how this arrangement came to be.
The arrangement came, if you will, of the force of Yevgeny Prigozhin, who, as Putin, was born in Leningrad and grew up somewhat on its rough streets at that time, involved in criminal activities, imprisoned for a number of years at the end of the Soviet Union, and then got into business and met Putin, and created this private military contracting company, which technically is illegal in Russia, and through it has been able to marshal a private army, provide Putin a non-attributable foreign element that can go into a number of other countries and back the regime in a way that can't be attributed in the gray zones in the world. And then also now we're seeing in Ukraine, they're heavily involved, especially in Africa.
So how did they recruit? And how is that different from the Russian army? Why would, say, somebody be a Wagner Group employee or fighter versus just enlisting with the Russian army?
I think that part of it is that because it is in the gray zone, the legal strictures are different. And the Wagner, for its foot soldiers, you'll have former military, you know, sort of soldiers of fortune, but also increasingly as the war ramped up in Ukraine, the convict population in Russia, get them out, pay a stipend, the Ministry of Defense looks away, and they bring in tens of thousands of former criminals. The Ministry of Defense, they are linked, they know what each other is doing, but the MOD keeps it at hand's length officially.
So in places like Syria or the Central African Republic, when Wagner is operating there, are they hiring locals to join the private mercenary force, or are they bringing in Russian conscripts?
I don't think they're bringing in what you would call Russian military conscripts, meaning draftees that go through the official Russian military system. But they are bringing in people, again, from the prisons and from more irregular ways. I think they absolutely are recruiting auxiliaries. And what is ominous, Deepa, is the Wagners in a number of these countries or areas are actually rather well supported by parts of it and Russian I don't want to call it foreign policy, but presence. And that's really a dichotomy of it all.
So I want to ask you about the human rights abuses, the really serious human rights violations that Wagner fighters have been accused of by independent watchdog groups. Is there any way to hold them accountable? Because as you point out, they're operating in a very gray area.
The problem is you have, as you touch on, Deepa, the gray zone where the Russian regime will be able to say, well, these were irregulars and they weren't under our command. But clearly, the military leadership and the regime is accountable. And so it is a very, very ugly gray area. And this is going to be a major focus area of the ICC in The Hague.
Tell us what about their activities in Syria was so egregious.
They are almost an independent warlord's army. They, of course, have links with the Russian military and certainly links with the Syrian military. And they don't have rules of engagement and constraining legal aspects of our military, most militaries in the world. And because of who they are and what they are, they have a proclivity to violence. And this is why they are violent and committing what we would call war crimes in Syria and a number of countries in Africa, and certainly in Ukraine.
Yeah. And in the years that followed, Wagner expanded its operations to places like Libya and the Central African Republic, countries with weak governments that have vital natural resources like diamonds and oil. What can you tell us about what they were doing there?
Well, it's dual purpose. One, you support the regime or the rebels that can, accelerate Wagner's interests, Russian interests. And there is clearly a lot of natural resources, you know, gold, mining, jewels, all of that, that in some of these countries that I think it's a business for Prigozhin and that group. And I don't know in the shady world if it funnels into the Russian regime as well, but it's clearly a criminal aspect that goes with the activities. There is no real law that controls these guys, which is what makes them so particularly odious.
And do you think, given the mass casualties that Prigozhin's mercenaries have suffered, that he might have trouble getting more people into his private army?
I think so, but I think also with the narrative and all that, they're saying they're fighting for, you know, they're fighting for the survival of Russia in a way that is counter to what the regime is actually saying. But it is a major stress increasingly with the regime. I think Prigozhin, frankly, has put himself, and it's far more than theater now, in a very precarious situation inside Russia, within the regime. The military hate him, the senior, and something's going to give there eventually. He can't keep going this way because it's destabilizing again to Putin, and it's really unnerving the Russian population that wants to think the special military operation is righteous and going okay.
Retired General Peter Zwack is a global fellow at the Wilson Center's Cannon Institute and a former U.S. senior defense official to the Russian Federation. Thank you for joining us.
Deepa, thank you for bringing me on.